Aspen may not have known about new media, but he used them, whereas I'm going to use old media, arguing for new media. My talk relates to the early session, the first session, in the sense that it's about, not so much about the human interaction with the machine, or the machine interaction with the machine, but what happens between human cultures when the machine structure changes. I have to do it. Okay. Let me begin then. In the globally networked world, strange, unexpected, and sometimes amusing events occur. I shall analyze one such happening with the purpose of understanding how the global communication system affects national cultures. It's my hypothesis that the current state of globalization, of which the internet is a major component, imposes new and heightened level of interaction between cultures. This interactivity changes each culture in many ways, one of which I highlight. The degree of autonomy of each culture is significantly reduced, I argue, as a consequence of the global information network. On the one hand, all attempts to sustain such autonomy tend to become retrograde and even dangerous. Local beliefs, values, and practices, I believe, can no longer be held as absolute or as exclusive at the expense of others. On the other hand, a new opportunity arises for a practical definition and articulation of global, human, or better, post-human culture. In short, henceforth the local is relative, and the global, or better, and the global may become universal. This universal, unlike earlier attempts to define it or impose it, will be, I think, differential. It will consist of a heterogeneity of local fragments. Although there are significant economic and demographic components of the new level of global interactivity, I address the issue of the flow of cultural objects within cyberspace. New media contribute greatly to the quantity and quality of the planetary transmission of cultural objects. Cultural objects, texts, sounds, and images posted to the internet exist in a digital domain that is everywhere at once. These objects are disembedded from their point of origin or production, entering immediately into a space that has no particular territorial inscription. As a result, the internet constitutes distributed culture, a heteroglossia that is commensurate with the earth. Cultural objects in new media are thus disjunct from their society. They are intelligible only through the medium in which they subsist. Cultural objects in cyberspace elicit a new hermeneutic, one that underscores the agency of the media, rendering defunct figures of the subject from all societies in which it persists and persisted in a position separate from objects. For the internet enables planetary transmissions of cultural objects, text, images, and sound, to cross cultural boundaries with little noise. Communications now transpire with digital accuracy. The dream of the communications engineer is realized as information flows without interference from any point on Earth to any other point or points. Cybernetic theory is fulfilled. Both machines and humans act on the environment through what Norbert Wiener calls the accuracy of reproduction. The accurate reproduction of information signals in an endless feedback loop that adjusts for changes and unexpected events. And yet, as Derrida argues in Postcard, things are not so simple. All the bits and bytes are there, all right, but the message does not always come across or get decoded. Misunderstandings abound in our new global culture, sometimes in quite pointed ways. This talk is about one such miscommunication. It concerns a perfect transmission of an image halfway around the globe that somehow went awry. Indeed, one may argue that the global network, with its instantaneous exact communications, produces systematically the effect of misrecognition as information objects are transported across cultural boundaries. Global communications, one might say, signifies transcultural confusion. At the same time, the network creates conditions of intercultural exchange that render politically noxious any culture which cannot decode the messages of others, which insists that only its transmissions have meaning or are significant. As never before, we must begin to interpret culture as multiple cacophonies of inscribed meanings as each cultural object moves between cultural differences. Let's look at one instance of the issue that I have in mind. The second week of October 2001 was eventful with the onset of U.S. and British bombing in Afghanistan. Like many Americans, I listened intently to reports of the war and to analyses by informed commentators and academics. On Friday of that week, a few days after the start of the bombing, I heard on a national public radio broadcast one expert on Middle Eastern cultures explain to the interviewer and audience that among the many aspects of American society that antagonizes Islamic fundamentalists, the worst is American popular culture. Even more than the American support for Israel or the American-led embargo of Iraq, the enemy, in the eyes of these Muslims, is, of all things, American popular culture. With some surprise, I filed this bit of knowledge somewhere in my brain's database and continued my ride home. Much could be said about American popular culture in the age of what Michael Hart and Antonio Negri called the empire. Here I need only note that a peculiarity of many Americans is the emotional fixation they often develop for figures in popular culture, not simply for acknowledged celebrities, but for all manner of objects, clothing, food, animated figures, music, television shows, and so forth. Americans, one can say, obsess about selected aspects of popular culture. And one such American is Dino Ignacio, who had an extraordinary dislike for Bert, a Muppet on public television's long-standing children's show, Sesame Street. For Mr. Ignacio, Bert was evil. To satisfy his obsession, Ignacio created a web page entitled Bert is Evil. Here, with the aid of a web browser, one finds Ignacio's evidence of the Muppet's alleged misdeeds. Among this evidence is a series of images that Ignacio thinks proves his point. Bert is pictured with Hitler, with the KKK, with Osama bin Laden, and with a long list of other evildoers. And here is one of those pictures. Technology. Well, you can see what it is. This is from Ignacio's homepage, and this is the kind of evidence that he amassed about evil Bert. There's another one with Hitler and so forth. Bert's crimes are just detailed with fastidious and unrelenting hostile energy. Perhaps Ignacio has too much time on his hands. But in any case, his web design is characteristic of the commitment of many Americans to their peculiar fetishistic attachments to popular culture figures. An understanding of this aspect of popular culture in the United States is essential to appreciate what follows. On Sunday, October 14th, a week after the bombing began, a friend of emailed me with an urgent message to look at the New York Times for an incredible story about a protest in Bangladesh on October 8th against American bombing in Afghanistan. The story he referred to by Amy Harmon, one of the best journalists, I think, writing in new media, included a picture of the protesters in Bangladesh carrying a poster of bin Laden that was an attractive collage composed of several images of him, along with a tiny picture of Bert, the Sesame Street Muppet, sitting on his left shoulder. And let me see if I can find that picture and if we can actually display it.
That's it, right here.
Oh, no, that's it, please. This is the one. This was the picture in the New York Times, and there he is. Another photograph that I found on the web indicates more clearly the face of Evil Bert. And now we can.
Top of here. You can see it's highlighted. But that was not in the
mirror. Bert's highlighted in the highlighted circle, grimacing at the viewer more fiercely than Osama. How is it possible for Bert to get into the scene in Bangladesh? Amy Harmon could not explain the inclusion of Bert in the poster, but there he was for all the world, and especially Islamic militants, to see. Perhaps he truly was evil, living up to Ignacio's image of him, siding with the Al-Qaeda terrorists. I was fascinated by Harmon's story and the accompanying photograph. Out of curiosity, I searched the web for more information about Bert's remarkable presence in Bangladesh. A simple image search for Evil Bert in Google yielded the following photographs that confirm the one reproduced in the New York Times article. They're also significant for understanding more of the story, and now I'll show them to you one at a time.
So these are all taken at the same demonstration, and here you see the same poster, but a more distant view, and there's barely visible is Bert right here on the side. Here again is a closer view, but again, here he is. And a couple more. Not very good at showing stuff. I'm really a tense person. Here he is again. Now you can see he's quite prominent in the picture. And finally, there's this, and there it is again. Let me just leave that one up there for a few minutes while I continue.
The main photograph that shows the picture very closely indicates that has the best information about how Evil Bert managed to appear in the poster. Let me return to that one.
It shows that the image of Bert in the poster is taken from Ignacio's webpage. In other words, this is exactly what was on the Evil Bert webpage, these two together.
The image on the Evil Bert page has simply been set into a collage of images of Bin Laden. There are 8 images of Bin Laden in the poster, including one from the Evil Bert page. In fact, the image of Bin Laden that Ignacio combined with the one of Bert on his page is the same one that is used in the Bangladesh poster that is positioned centrally in that poster.
In other words, this image is the same as this image.
When I began to relate the story of Bert's appearance in a pro-Taliban demonstration to colleagues and students at UCI, I encountered another strange twist. About half the people I showed the New York Times story and photograph to concluded that it indicated a sophisticated knowledge of American pop culture by the Bangladesh militants. They had appropriated, according to my friends and colleagues, they had appropriated, as cultural studies would say, the nasty image of Bert and shoved it into the face of Westerners as if to say, if you think Osama is evil, we'll take evil Bert on our side and use him against you. Another 25% of the people I spoke to simply didn't believe the photo at all. In the age of digital images, they surmised the photo was doctored. Someone in the West had added the figure of Bert to the photo that appeared in the New York Times, but that it had never appeared, these people thought, in Bangladesh itself. Evil Bert, they concluded, was not in Bangladesh. The rest of my respondents accepted the image at face value and were utterly at sea to explain it. I next went online to pursue the discussion. I found a flurry of comments about the photo. Some Scandinavian newspapers were convinced it was a hoax. Others assumed the protesters in Bangladesh, unlike their Taliban compatriots, watched American television and were avid Sesame Street fans. The photo produced a variety of misunderstandings by Westerners of Bangladesh culture. The babble-like confusion of cultural tongues only heightened with the transmission of more and more information from across the globe. Meanwhile, Mr. Ignacio must not be left out of the picture, so to speak, for he also became a victim of information overload. His reaction to the New York Times story was guilt. He very quickly took down the Evil Bert webpage and posted in its place an apology. He concluded that somehow his webpage abetted terrorism. On his apology website, he stated his remorse, admitting that reality had intruded on his fantasy. In his words, and I quote, "This has gotten too close to reality," end of quote. Suddenly, his obsession with Bert decathected and left him shorn of his libidinal outlets, staring fixedly at his own superego-induced guilt. With a global audience presumably shocked and angered at his web design, Ignacio now suffered from the burst bubble of his fetish. But that's not the end of his woes. The Internet does not forget so easily the crimes of its producers. What Ignacio wanted to hide would not disappear. For other web authors admiring his work created mirror sites. Indeed, at least 9 of them were up and running at one point shortly after October 14th, all displaying boldly the full variety of Evil Bert's deeds and photographic evidence for them, including the controversial image of Bert and Bin Laden. The emergence of the mirror sites complicates the cultural confusion, subverting the power of authors to control their work in yet another manner. Not only did the anti-American militants of Bangladesh unknowingly and without authorization appropriate Evil Bert, but other Americans, admiring the handicraft of Ignacio, perpetuated his work for their own ends. For their part, the producers of Sesame Street were also not amused by the perfect transmission of the image of Bert. They are quoted in a CNN report with the following response to the event. "Sesame Street has always stood for mutual respect and understanding. We are outraged that our characters would be used in this unfortunate and distasteful manner. This is not humorous." End of quote. How did the image of Bert get on that poster in Bangladesh? The answer is simpler in one sense and more complex in another than the views and imaginings of my colleagues at UCI. A journalist discovered finally who made the poster, telephoned the company, and unraveled at least part of the mystery. A local graphics company in Bangladesh was hired by the militants to produce a poster for the demonstration. It had to be done quickly. It was a day after the bombing began. It had to be done quickly because the protest was planned for just one day after the bombing. In these circumstances, the company did what anyone today would do. They went on the web. They did an image search for Osama bin Laden and presto, downloaded a number of them, included, we must note, the image from Evil Bert, the Evil Bert webpage. They also put out a request to friends who emailed them images as attachments. The representative of the graphics company admitted outright that they did not notice Bert when they put together several images of the Bin Laden of Bin Laden for the poster. Here, incredible as it might seem to some, is the report on the Urban Legends webpage, and I quote this reporter, "Mustafa Kamal, the production manager of Azad Products, the Dhaka shop that made the posters, told the AP that he had gotten the images off the internet." And this is a quote now from Kamal. "We did not give the pictures a second look or realize what they signified until you pointed it out to us." End of quote. It was as simple as that. The transmission of Burt's image went completely unnoticed in the culture of Bangladesh, invisibly to the militants of Bangladesh. Burt snuck into the poster, where he was indeed noticed by Western journalists covering the story of the protest. It could be that the poster company representative lied to the Western journalist, perhaps not wanting to take responsibility for the inclusion of Burt in the poster. Perhaps the company representative did not have accurate information about the image of Burt. Perhaps the company intentionally put Burt in the poster as a joke or ironic comment, either to the West or to the protesters. Even if any of these possibilities were true, the fact remains that the protesters themselves appear not to have noticed the image of Burt and are certainly not likely to recognize his image from the Sesame Street program. The photos of the demonstration indeed show some banners in English. Even the notorious photo has a caption with bin Laden's name in Roman alphabet. At least some of the demonstrators were aware of Western media coverage of the event and were interested in getting a message to the West about who they supported and what they wanted to happen. You can see even in that one that his name is written in that script. Nonetheless, the circuit of transmission was closed. We may conclude that in all likelihood the protesters in Bangladesh did not see the image of Burt. From Ignacio's anti-cult website to the anti-American pop culture protest halfway around the world and back again to the West in the medium of print journalism, Evil Burt's digital bites circumnavigated the globe in a series of misrecognitions, perfect transmissions, confusions, blends of politics and culture that surely speaks much about our current global culture. The conditions of global transmissions in the case of Burt Laden initiate many changes in communication practices in all societies. The internet imposes everywhere new challenges and offers new opportunities. The political consequences of the response to the internet are serious indeed. Just as the mixing of peoples within a nation renders especially noxious parochial ethnic and racial attitudes, so the mixing of cultural objects in the internet compels each culture to acknowledge the validity, if not the moral value, of such objects that may be alien and other. With Burt Laden, the stakes are especially high in the context of the war between Al-Qaeda and the American-led coalition. Mass communication scholars tell us that the failure of recognition of Burt by the Bangladesh protesters is a case of aberrant decoding. They failed to interpret correctly the image of Burt and Osama. This omission was, however, highly motivated. The protesters cherished a pre-existing hostility toward American popular culture, even though they proudly displayed one of its minor icons in their demonstration. Their hostility to U.S. popular culture, like that of other fundamentalist Islamic groups, derives from a wish to maintain the autochthony of their beliefs and values. They wish to insulate themselves against American popular culture, viewing it as a potential threat to their own way of life, perhaps because of its popularity with other Muslims or Middle Easterners. Yet exactly this effort at insulation is proved impossible in the instance at hand. In another example of parochial attitudes, a highly respected Middle Eastern journalist, Ali Asadullah, reported in an Islamic online newspaper about the problem with American, in this case, Western culture. In an article entitled, significantly, Spice Girls, Exactly the Reason Why Bin Laden Hates the West, end of quote. Asadullah reported that a former Spice Girl, Jerry Halliwell, on October 6th, just before the bombing, and entertained British troops in Oman. For this respected Muslim journalist, there was all the proof needed to explain and indeed justify disdain by some of Islamic faith for U.S. and British society. And I quote now Asadullah. The core causes for terrorist rage and aggression against the United States, he wrote, was the Spice Girls, not the hatred of freedom, liberty, and democracy. Those are his words. Muslims, he concluded, quote, want their cultures, traditions, and religions and societal standards to be respected. I argue this is exactly the logic that no longer works. With globally networked digital communications, one must be especially careful in taking as an offense the legitimate cultural practices of another, even if they're on one's own soil. I will not make any invidious comparisons of the practices of the Taliban, say, with regard to women, to those of the British, but you can imagine easily where my sentiments lie. Because because cultural objects circulate everywhere, there's no longer any local soil on Earth. Moral outrage directed at the cultural practices of others, especially toward those that do no physical harm, today become particularly obnoxious. Journalists and intellectuals such as Asadullah, with their smug air of moral repugnance at Western popular culture, do much harm, I think, in justifying the sentiments from which arose the hideous murders of September 11th. What is more, the luxury of such a moral claim, inspired in this and many other cases, not by any means limited to the world of Islam, is often grounded in versions of monotheism. It may be that in the present context of collective human intelligence embodied in the Internet is a set of deep cultural opposition to parochialism in general, and in particular to versions of monotheism that refuse the condition of cultural pluralism. The one and only God may have to make way for the many gods. If that's the case, then Bert Laden incident is more than an amusing series of cross-cultural confusions, but an allegory of changes in contemporary culture, ones rife with profound political implications. In conclusion, the main interest of my intervention is not, however, to renew a theological critique. Rather, my purpose is to raise the questions of the general role of media and culture and the particular role of new media. Transmission may now in the digital domain be both noiseless and incoherent. Interpretive practices must accordingly recalibrate themselves to the conditions of planetary culture. Research about any cultural object in cyberspace entails an infinite series of interpretive acts. Translation is now a central dimension of any cultural study. Texts, images, and sounds now travel at the speed of electrons and may be altered at any point along their course. They're as fluid as water and simultaneously present everywhere. They mock the presuppositions of all previous hermeneutics and the subject positions associated with them. They require a discipline of study unlike any that has subsisted in academic institutions. From this vantage point, Evil Bert, the emblem I've selected to designate cyberculture, is indeed a troublemaker. Thank you.